Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 112 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, great to see you again.
Good to see you, Jason.
So, a pretty exciting week. I think there's a ton of stuff for us to talk about. I know there's a lot of stuff from Bitcoin, but there's a lot of other things going on in the same space that would be good to try to get to. But I think let's start out with one of the themes that we had talked about at the beginning of the year was this tokenization of real world assets. And BlackRock was one of the bigger companies to kind of push this. And they have just announced that they are going to be releasing Builder, I think is the name of it, which is their first tokenized fund that's going to be issued on a public blockchain. So that is pretty exciting to see. I think it's going to be issued on Ethereum with the help of BNY Mellon as kind of the custodian and a few other companies as well. But I mean, tokenizing real world assets and putting it on a public blockchain is exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of the efforts from crypto have been kind of a bottom up building strategy where it's small organizations that are funded with private equity, or they create these coins in order to fund themselves. And this is like the first time it's going to be a top-down construction where you've got a big, powerful player that's going to take a small team and focus on what would be like kind of a crypto-friendly or a crypto market entry kind of thing. So at the very least, you know, it's going to be well funded. I think anybody in crypto, you know, prior to January is probably against it just because it's BlackRock. But you never know where good ideas come from. So, you know, you kind of have to, you have to give them a shot because it's crypto and you don't have any, you can't tell anybody not to do anything, even if you wanted to.
Well, maybe from a good news perspective, the state of New York actually just approved WisdomTree to release their financial app, which will allow for tokenized assets or tokenized funds, I think, for like people in 21 different states. So it's not that BlackRock is the only one doing it. I think when BlackRock does it, it makes waves just because I feel like they have their hand in government and they can control a lot more. So if they're doing it, then maybe it's a good thing that it's probably going to happen. But it's also good to see that companies like WisdomTree are doing the same thing. And states like New York, which has typically been one of the most difficult states in the U.S. to get anything approved, is saying, yeah, this makes sense. Let's move forward with it. And now here's a financial app coming out for everybody to use.
Yeah, it's strange how once BlackRock gets involved, then the news is pro whatever BlackRock wants to do. And the government is either neutral or pro whatever BlackRock wants to do. So, you know, it's one of those things, you know, when you have somebody on your team that's got more horsepower, you're going to dislike them a little bit no matter what, but they're still the power hitter, you know, they're still going to get more things done every time they swing the bat.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the other good news too, is like places like the UK, I think the London Stock Exchange just announced a date for them to release Bitcoin and Ethereum ETNs, exchange traded notes, which is pretty much tokenized on their exchanges. And I think that's coming in like May of 28th, right? So it's not that just the US is the one pushing this. There's a lot of other countries now doing it too. And I think we've talked about in the past, the UK doesn't really have a lot of other resources. So the money side of things has to be what they kind of focus on. And they seem to be one of the countries that is trying to push the hardest to become kind of more of a financial capital, especially when it comes to cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I saw that from the UK, and the only thing that kind of sucks about it is it's only available to, I can't remember what language they used, professional investors. It wasn't accredited investors, but it's like, yeah, if you don't have enough money, you can't use these tools. But I'll say it again, man, if you're Joe Sixpack and you've known about crypto for long enough, you've had Coinbase, you've had access, you could have gotten in. So, I'm feeling less and less sorry for people that are getting left behind as these larger institutions get involved, because you've had a decade, right? I mean, it may be not a decade, maybe 8 years, but if you got in a small way when you first heard about it, you'd be in a big way right now. And that, so I'm less sympathetic to things like this, where it's like the government has to make, the regulators have to make a decision. They can cover their butts by only allowing professional investors to get in. And that way they're not hurting the retail investor. So for me, I mean, I've been in Bitcoin buying it and doing all these kind of weirdo exchanges, and I'm not very tech savvy, you know, especially if you compare me to people that are 10 years younger than me. And I've been able to navigate all this water and figure out all these different exchanges and do all this stuff with like a medium level of effort. So to me, it's your fault if you're not into Bitcoin or crypto right now. So I'm not mad at the UK.
Yeah, no, I mean, to me, it's not so much that they're limiting it to accredited investors, whatever that terminology is going to be. It's the writing is on the wall that companies are trying to come into this. Institutions are trying to get into this. The U.S. made it very difficult with getting rid of the three banks that actually supported institutions onboarding onto crypto. The rest of the world is now trying to figure out how to allow institutions to get in. You can see the writing on the wall. There's still an opportunity to get in for the average Joe, knowing that all these companies, all these sovereign nations are going to start to clamor for it. I mean, shoot, just look at the ETFs for Bitcoin. They had a theoretically horrible last week or so, where I think GBTC had $1.8 billion outflows, right? And that's still the inflows from everybody else cut that in less than half, right? And a lot of that was from the Genesis of the world and everybody else selling GPTC. But even with the huge amount of money going out, there's still a ton of money coming in, which is kind of exciting to see.
Yeah, I believe there was like a 5-day period where every day had net outflows in the aggregate from the ETFs, but Bitcoin's price went up. So, you know, the ETFs are an indicator, and it is kind of nice to have some transparency on what's coming in and out of the ETFs, but they're still, and I think they're up to maybe 20-30% of global buy and sell pressure. But you're talking about the U.S. has access to the ETFs. So that means people in the United States, citizens and organizations, can easily get Bitcoin exposure. So if you're in the UK and you're not allowing that, you're putting your population at a disadvantage, and the game theory rolls on, right? So if you have companies in the UK that want to play the MicroStrategy game and put, even if it's not 180 or 200% of your corporate wealth fund, even if you wanted to put 10% in, it'd be really difficult to do without an ETF. You have to go through all the hurdles that Michael Saylor went through and getting your finance team and your legal team and everybody else on board. And so, yeah, just allowing your businesses and your high net worth individuals to get Bitcoin exposure. I mean, if you're not doing it, you're punishing your population. So they've got to do something.
Yeah, I think I saw that Goldman Sachs had come out and said there is a ton of interest from their clients, which a lot of them are the hedge fund guys, in crypto products. Right. So it's still very early in terms of institutional engagement in a lot of this stuff. And I think even Cathie Wood, her previous Bitcoin prediction was like 1.5 million by 2030. And she has come out and said, with the amount of institutions that are starting to gain interest in Bitcoin, that even if they get to, I think, 5% of the portfolio, which is like, that's going to be almost a no brainer for them to do, that's going to raise it up to about a $3.8 million Bitcoin projection. So, I mean, it's still early, right? I mean, we're 70K, right? Going to 3.8 million is still a 50X or something like that from here.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about the institutions rolling in. Merrill Lynch came out and said they are, I don't know if they're approving it or they're in the process of approving it, but you know, all of these guys are, you know, they're in their mind, the ETFs have only been available for 2.5 months. They're brand new. They're still in the early evaluation period. you know, for us in crypto, where we're traveling at the speed of light compared to these organizations, you know, I feel like the ETF's been out forever, and I feel like the price has been like low and slow and not really doing much. But, you know, you turn around and it's like, well, we're at 70,000. We hit a dip down to like the low 60s, really. That's pretty solid price-wise, you know, if you take a step back and think about where we were a year ago. And so, yeah, there's still time. It's still early. But, you know, a lot of these people aren't getting in. They didn't get in 6 months ago. They didn't get in a year ago. They didn't, you know, at a certain point, they're just going to be on the sidelines forever, and they're just not going to pull the trigger. But these bigger organizations are. And it is easier to take 2% of someone else's net worth and buy Bitcoin with it than it is to take 2% of your net worth and buy Bitcoin with it. There's not as much emotional attachment to it. So these organizations, when they move money around, it's mechanical. And so once they get approval to do it, they'll just do it. And if Bitcoin price goes up or down, they don't feel the pain of an individual who does it. So to me, there's still time, but you know, there is Bitcoin's price ever going to see $30,000 or $40,000 again? Maybe not, you know, and we were just there 3 months ago. So 3 months from now, we might be saying the same thing about 70 grand. But if you're not, if you don't get out of fiat and into Bitcoin, then you're still wondering like, oh, when should I buy? Now, then you should have bought yesterday. And if you didn't buy yesterday, you should buy some today.
Yeah. And of course, this isn't financial advice, but we're kind of doing what we say we're doing at the same time.
Oh, yeah. On these dips, I bought more in these ETFs that are in my retirement accounts. I'm like, okay, well, if you're going to go to 60, I've kind of got a little bit more that of these stocks that I don't really believe in anyway. Yeah. So why don't I move a little bit of money into a Bitcoin ETF that I have a lot of confidence in?
Yeah. So the other thing that's kind of going on is if you look at the macro side of things, there's still a lot of craziness going on from a world perspective on almost governments attacking crypto. We've talked about Nigeria in the past, which is crazy that we're talking about Nigeria in a negative way, because typically Nigeria has been probably one of the top three countries in terms of adoption, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about it where they asked for some of the Binance execs to come talk with them. And then when they got there, they locked them up in a hotel room for the most part and didn't charge them with anything. Well, out of those two execs, one just escaped. And apparently they took the passport from him. I think it was a him. Apparently he had a different passport that they're not sure how he got. Now that he's escaped, now Binance has turned around and filed, I think, four tax issues against, or sorry, Nigeria has filed four tax issues against Binance, saying that they're doing a bunch of things and not paying their taxes. So we're going to see kind of what happens. They're still holding one of the execs hostage for the most part. They won't let him leave. So not sure where this is going to go, but it's kind of interesting to keep our eyes on for a little while.
Yeah, I feel like Nigeria is kind of in the death throes as their currency explodes and they're struggling to try to figure out how to keep the government control of the money. And, you know, the crypto is the exit ramp. And a lot of Nigerians, like you said, they've been adopting various crypto, stable coins and everything else for years. So their comfort level is through the roof from the number of the population of Nigeria. And so, yeah, if you're losing control of your fiat and your people know how to get around it, you know, I'm sure it feels like a quicker death for your currency. And what are they going to do? They're going to fight whatever battles they can fight to kind of kick the can as long as they can and keep their currency alive. And if that means locking up Binance executives and charging them with trumped up tax, you know, just making stuff up, really. You know, eventually you get to a point where if you show me the man, you'll show me the crime. And that's kind of, it seems like that's where Nigeria is headed.
Well, it's funny, you look at kind of, if you look back, what, 6 months or so, Russia had an issue with Binance and kind of kicked Binance out of Russia, saying that what they were doing was wrong. And days before the notice of Binance leaving was happening, a new exchange was created. I think it was COMEX or something like that. And it has now just announced that it's shutting its doors. As of, I think, like the end of April, they're done. So it's like, well, apparently Binance knew what they were doing. If the government's trying to run this and try to make people not get into crypto, well, maybe they did a good job. They're trying to eliminate some of the on-ramps and off-ramps for them. So it's going to have to be more of a figure out your own way to do it and kind of go back to the Stone Age like some of us were doing in the U.S. years ago.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, these governments are going to fight it. I think the ETFs in the United States is probably the most helpful piece to keep the United States government from fighting it any harder, because the more money that goes into the ETFs in the United States, the more old grandmother and grandfather retirement accounts have at Bitcoin exposure. And you're talking about the government stepping in and wiping people out that are just trying to invest in normal ETFs and mutual funds and stocks. And so if the United States government isn't going to really crack down on things, I think there's a trickle down effect to other governments that you don't really want to pick the other side of the trade versus the United States. And so if the United States can be Bitcoin neutral to friendly, you don't want to be on the other side of that.
Which is what China and Russia are right now. And I don't think anybody wants to be on their side right now.
Right. But Hong Kong is getting their version of the ETFs in the next couple of weeks, I think. Yeah. And so that's kind of, that feels like one of those communist country bone throwing moves for the rich people in mainland China that have access to Hong Kong accounts so that they can get Bitcoin exposure while other people can't. It has that feeling of somebody's brother-in-law wants to get into Bitcoin and the other guy's in control of regulation. So they're going to have some access. And I mean, Hong Kong is a financial center for the East. So it seems like, you know, ever since I've been in crypto and Bitcoin, the Asian countries can move the meter. Like they're not afraid to go big time into crypto and pour money in. And, you know, I feel like the United States, you have crazy people that are 100% into Bitcoin. And then you have like mostly crazy people that are 20% into Bitcoin. But for Asian countries, man, it's like those guys, they don't give a rip. They'll let it rock on dumping a ton of money into Bitcoin and crypto. So they may not have as much funds available, but they're willing to put a greater percentage of those funds into Bitcoin and crypto in general.
Yeah. So speaking of other countries, I mean, I feel like we should talk about El Salvador, because they came out with another announcement that they plan on buying one Bitcoin a day until it becomes unattainable with fiat currency to continue to buy it. So I think the latest numbers they released, they have almost double the amount of Bitcoin that I think everybody thought they had. It's almost 5,700 Bitcoin, so like $400 million. So they can continue to believe that Bitcoin is going to be the future for them and for a lot of other people too. So good for them.
Hey, I mean, it's El Salvador. If you know, it's not like they went in a huge way and put 100% of everything they got into Bitcoin, right? I mean, they $400 million is a lot, but it's not 180% of their global wealth, sovereign wealth fund. And so they're in like a fairly normal, reasonable way, and it's working. So other countries have got to be paying attention. And you've seen it three times now, same as me. When the price goes up, anybody that's like on the verge of jumping into Bitcoin, like they feel that sense of urgency and like that the window's closing and that the price is never going to be, you know, they were on the fence at $25,000 6 months ago, and now it's at 70, and they don't know if it's going to go back to 50. And so, you know, for these countries that are on the edge, you know, some of them are going to start jumping in, and the more they jump in, the more the price goes up. the more the price goes up, the more other countries have to jump in because it may not come back down. And so El Salvador and MicroStrategy are just handing people the blueprints on what to do. And it doesn't take much research at all to find out that the biggest winners in Bitcoin are the people that get in early. Even if they don't get in a big way early, you start learning and you start doing the research to figure out what you bought. And so the sooner you start that process, the sooner you get through the 1,000 hours of research that really gets you to understand what you did and what Bitcoin is. So honestly, man, it's like kind of fun to root for the price because you're rooting for El Salvador and MicroStrategy to be like just world rockers when it comes to these decisions they've made. So yeah, it makes it kind of fun to pull for Bitcoin.
And I know you'd rather talk about Bitcoin the entire time, but Ethereum made the news here lately. So the SEC has apparently started investigating Ethereum as a security, which I don't know if you've heard about this or not, but there was a disclosure on their website that has been taken down that pretty much said that they would always tell you if they were being investigated. And now that it's down, it's kind of them telling. So it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens with that. The Bitwise CEO or somebody, I think, went out and said that his belief was that a spot Ethereum ETF would gather more assets if they launch in December versus May, which is apparently the most confrontational thing that he said, I think, out there. So I don't know right now, according to the Polymarkets, if you're betting on Ethereum getting the Ethereum spot ETF getting approved in May, it's down to less than 20% at this point. So not sure really what's going on. I think it's going to be hard for the SEC to convince somebody that Ethereum is a security after it's already been approved on the futures market as a commodity. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, but this is one of those things that I think has taken some of the steam out of Ethereum's sale maybe right now, even though BlackRock just said they're putting it on the Ethereum blockchain, right? So public blockchain. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes, but it's definitely going to be another story to pay attention to over the next couple of months.
Yeah, I've been kind of paying attention to the Ethereum ETF approval process. One, I'm following the Bloomberg Bitcoin ETF guys, and they're kind of at that 30%, like a pessimistic 30% chance that it gets approved in May is the latest I saw from them. But the Ethereum, this just boils down to the SEC not saying anything and just kind of influencing what direction things go subtly, because it's like, okay, you've got the Ethereum futures, which is favorable for them having to approve the ETF, which is favorable for this thing not being considered a security. And you've got the court ruling on the other crypto, it might have been XRP, that said, well, yeah, it was a security when they offered the pre-mine to a select number of investors. But it's been a commodity ever since the secondary market took over and it's available on exchanges. And so Ethereum's been, the pre-mine's been 7-8 years or whatever, 9 years now. So for me, it's like the SEC is just pushing enough to get a lawsuit from the Ethereum Foundation so that they can let the courts tell them what to do, which, maybe that's the play if you don't want to go against Elizabeth Warren and you still want to work in government after you're done with the SEC. But I feel like the courts are going to steer things towards Ethereum being a commodity, even though I think it is a security. And I can't believe that anybody wants to put a ton of money behind Ethereum and Vitalik, because he looks like he's literally just going to fall apart. So I don't get it, but I don't like the government just kind of doing nothing and waiting for the courts to decide. But honestly, the longer it takes for the Ethereum ETF to get approved, and the longer it takes for them to decide whether it's a security or a commodity, the better it is for Bitcoin. Because there's just less funds available to flow into Bitcoin if Ethereum also has an ETF.
Well, I think at this point, Ethereum is the de facto standard for distributed computing, right? So whether you like it or not, it's going to be around for quite some time. If BlackRock is choosing Ethereum to be the public blockchain that they put this stuff on, companies like BlackRock don't make a decision very lightly and then not try to push it forward. So, I mean, whether you like them or hate them, I think Ethereum would do well. Yeah, I agree, Vitalik is probably not the face man that you want. The good news is he doesn't truly control Ethereum, much like there isn't a typical controller of Bitcoin either. So at least the future looks good. The other kind of crazy thing too, from an Ethereum perspective, you have Google, who typically has been anti-crypto for quite a while. They have recently added ENS support, which is that Ethereum naming service, so that anytime you've seen that .eth address, so you can now plug that into the Google search and it'll take you to that, which is kind of interesting because now you can start to use stuff like that to get access to websites, right? So it can kind of create a whole new business model for some people too. So that's kind of cool they're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I've noticed about Ethereum is that from a price standpoint, Solana has been moving higher faster. And I don't know if there's any connection to kind of where things are going in the future, if people are going to be building more on Solana versus Ethereum, but, or if it's just degenerate gamblers picking, you know, Ethereum has kind of become old and stale and they're going to be picking something that appears to be moving faster. But, you know, as soon as they find some use cases for these other things, one of those two seems like they're going to take the lead.
Yeah, I mean, I think from what I've seen, Solana, one, got decimated by the whole FTX, right? Everybody thought it was going to die. And it's one of the reasons it's come back so much. It was no one thought it was going to survive. Ethereum still has the majority of development going on. I mean, if you look at it, I think Cardano is by far heads and shoulders above everybody else in terms of development. And Ethereum is number two at like half the amount Cardano is, right? And then it starts going down from there. So Solana still hasn't really taken off to match Ethereum on development yet. They're trying. A lot of it seems to be more meme coins. The transactions per second, I think, have been intriguing. Solana still has a lot of work to go before I think everybody's bought in that the uptime will be there. I mean, we've joked for a while that it'd be nice for them to put a sign on their door when they're open. Ethereum has a lot of layer two solutions that are trying to help make some of those gas prices cheaper. We talked about even the ZK stuff, the zero knowledge stuff. Polygon ZK EVM, which is the zero knowledge on their Ethereum virtual machine, went down for 10 hours the other day, right? So ZK, while it's great technology, it's still early on and it's not perfect, right? But it is only a small piece of what Polygon's doing and just one of the many ways that they're using L2s to connect to Ethereum. So there's still going to be kind of some growing pains. I think Ethereum is, from an overall network, is pretty strong. Solana has some cool features to it. It'll depend on kind of where things go and what people decide on. I don't think Ethereum's going to die by any means anytime soon. But could Solana chase it and catch it? Who knows? But there's also a lot of these next generation smart contract platforms that are nipping on Solana's heels too. So who knows what'll happen? I have Solana, but it's more of a for other reasons. And now I'm just like, well, might as well keep it.
Yeah, I think I still have Solana from the 2020, 2021, when it was kind of one of the new kind of hot crypto. It wasn't a meme coin that just had no use case. Like they actually had, you know, talked about having some differentiating technology that would set them apart. And so, yeah, I just decided like, I'm just going to sit on some of the stuff that I bought back then. And, you know, I did sell Litecoin because I was like, you know, the Lightning Network's going to take over what Litecoin was trying to do. So, you know, I'm like, there's no real reason to hold on to this. So, you know, some of them do get cut, but well, you know, you'd have never known that Solana is going to appreciate to be a whatever it is, a top five crypto. I mean, it was definitely in the top 10 whenever I looked months ago. So, you know, you don't know which ones are going to blow up, and you certainly don't know which one of these meme coins is going to go nuts. It's such a dumb market. I guess I understand it from a gambling standpoint, and like a day trader standpoint. But, you know, once I feel like once you're in that game for a little while, you kind of get sucked in by the gravity of Bitcoin to be like, oh, I don't have to waste all day every day trying to figure out which coins are going to go up 20% today. I can just buy Bitcoin and go live my life and go for a hike and do whatever I want and let Bitcoin do its thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, not sure even what to tell people as far as the meme coin stuff, because it doesn't make sense to me, right? So I did break down and buy a couple with a small amount of money just to see what it was going to be like, but
it's hard not to.
Yeah, it's just wanted to see what the hype was about. I think one of the going back to Ethereum, I mean, one of the reasons Ethereum is there is the trust, right? I mean, it's such a large network. The amount of value locked in it is so big, much like Bitcoin. Bitcoin is even more than that, right? But what was interesting, and I know you're an Apple guy, right? Apple had some stuff come out on their security issues on their M1, 2, and 3 chips. So we've talked a lot about making sure you put your crypto on cold wallets. Well, they found a way that they can theoretically hack Apple's chips to get access to the cryptographic keys that are stored on the phones. So if you do have an Apple, don't keep a lot of money on your MetaMask account or your Phantom account if you have Solana on your app, right? That's definitely a problem. I think they had about 100 days to fix it. They didn't fix it, so now it is officially released to the public. I don't think it's a cheap way for them to kind of hack in, so they're probably going to target people that have a lot of crypto to make it worthwhile, but it's still one of those things that, to me, Apple is always differentiating factor was they had this secure network that nobody could get into, and that's turning into not the case anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you know, put it on the list of reasons why grandma is going to buy an ETF and not buy on Coinbase and put it on a wallet on her phone, because that's weird. And oh, by the way, the BlackRock owned news media really published that Apple is hackable. And oh, by the way, Trezor had a problem and Ledger had a problem. And so until BlackRock has a problem and loses everybody's money, it's going to be the preferred way for non-Bitcoin curious and not crypto curious, like people that are just too daggum busy to do the work. All of this stuff is just being like, yeah, okay, I'm just going to buy the ETF.
Oh, yeah. It's all about trust. I mean, that's almost what crypto is built on, is how can you have something that you trust that eliminates the middleman that can kind of screw some things up. And even WorldCoin, God, I hate talking about WorldCoin, but one of the things that they've done is to increase trust and transparency is they're going to open source some of their key components in the Orb scanner, because nobody trusts those right now. Countries are saying that's a problem, yet now they're saying, okay, we'll open this up and give it to everybody to prove that it is going to be a technology that is beneficial for the future, considering the amount of AI and bots that are going to be out there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bitcoin's all about verify, don't trust. But like, you're either trusting yourself not to lose your stuff and not have a backup, or you're trusting a hardware wallet or software wallet or Apple or, you know, BlackRock or any of the other ETF holders. So, you know, I think when it comes down to it, the farther away from hardcore crypto people you get, the more you get to people that are just like, I don't care. I just need to do it. And like WorldCoin keeps popping up. I can't believe that thing won't just die. It seems like a terrible idea, because you're going from like, well, do I trust myself, or do I trust BlackRock's ETF, or do I trust Bitwise ETF? And then you go into the WorldCoin, it's like, you have no idea who's behind this, right? Like Sam Altman and artificial intelligence. But like now you're talking about, it's not just trusting some another entity with your money, but you're talking about there's identity mixed in with an iris scan. Like if that works, then it's almost like why the heck, how can we live in a world where WorldCoin and Bitcoin are both successful? Like they're on the opposite sides of this thing.
Yeah, I agree. I know the other thing that is kind of an exciting event that's going to happen here in a couple of days is the sentencing for SBF is supposed to happen on the 28th. So I'm intrigued to see what's going to happen. I think 75% of where everybody thinks it's going to fall is somewhere between 20 and 50 years. So hopefully it's more the latter than it is the former. There's talk about that if he's good for the first, I don't know, 5-10 years, then he might get out even earlier. But this is kind of a big deal to see what they really do to somebody that tries to steal trillions of dollars from people around the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's just funny if I'm like, man, if he gets 25 years, if he owned any Bitcoin and he can't touch it because he's in prison and it's not allowed, he could come out like 25 years later and be like, oh, good, I'm good to go. My Bitcoin's still here and it's worth, you know, $3.8 million a piece, if Kathy Wood's right. But yeah, I lock him up. He totally screwed up. Not just people that got FTX and FTT tokens and went through their exchange and didn't and got screwed, but he screwed up everybody that was into Bitcoin and crypto because it was such a headwind in that last ramp up and all of the fake selling and all of the basically just taking people's money and never buying Bitcoin with it and then just doing whatever else you're doing with it in this fraudulent Ponzi scheme that he had. You know, everybody was expecting a much more exciting bull run last time, and he's a big reason why that was wrecked. And it discredited the entire industry so that it's tough for people that aren't into Bitcoin to really believe that, oh, well, why isn't it going to happen to me where this, you know, this nerdy kid is going to take all my money, right? Because you got to do 40 hours of research before you even understand the difference between exchanges and hardware wallets and self-custody and ETFs. So, you know, it's just making it tougher. So he's 25 years is fine with me. 50 years, if he doesn't learn his lesson in 25, I don't think he's going to learn it in 50.
Yeah, so speaking of other disgraced founders, CZ, who used to be the CEO of Binance and had done very well until everybody decided they didn't want him to be part of that anymore, has announced that he's going to be releasing his new project called Giggle Academy, which is going to be focused on providing free education to the world. So not a lot more than that out yet, but it's interesting to see that he's moving on and doing something new.
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy that sent out the bat signal on FTX being a total scam. So, I mean, I kind of have a softer spot for CZ, you know, at least he was upfront about it. So, you know, I've heard him talk a few times. He doesn't seem to be a terrible person. I feel like governments have been against him, but I don't recall Binance just stealing anybody's money. And I know they created Binance US in order to play by the rules in the United States and allow US citizens to have access to stuff. So he doesn't, he's no hero in crypto world, but he doesn't seem like a villain either.
No, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of what the US did with Binance is they wanted to have complete access to all the files that Binance had on everybody so that they could do their own spying, right? And it took $4 billion for that to happen, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that I saw that was interesting that's not so much crypto related, but it is one of those things that is kind of perking up my ears a little to see what happens. So Spain is in the process of suspending Telegram, one of the messaging apps. And the reason being is because there was a bunch of media companies in Spain that got together and said that there was an unauthorized use of their content being shared on Telegram. So they want to shut Telegram down. So that's a little surprising, especially considering what 20% of Spain's population uses Telegram today. And the media companies don't like someone being able to share information without them approving it, I guess. So I don't know. It's hopefully this doesn't happen because I think it will create a lot more problems for media companies in general if it does. Or maybe it would be a good thing to happen because then it'll speed things along and almost eliminate the need for media companies in general moving forward.
Yeah, I didn't see this one. This didn't get on my radar through the algorithm, but I can't imagine in any sort of a democracy, this sort of thing flying. You know, there's got to be enough people to explain like, hey, you can't restrict our media access. You know, you can regulate them, but like straight up denying an entire, you know, leg of individual media company, it seems super fishy. So I don't know. I'll probably do a little research on that one.
And then, speaking of some other interesting projects going on out there, we've been talking about AI for a while now. ICP, Internet Computer, just, I guess, showed that they are processing AI on blockchain using smart contracts. So, which is a cool little demo. If you haven't seen that, I would go take a look. The other crazy part about ICP is I think they just passed over 3 billion blocks that they have completed, which may be more than a lot of the other companies kind of combined.
Yeah, ICP is one that I remember when it came out, and I thought it was the stupidest name for a protocol, and I'm like, this is going nowhere. It's not just amazing that it still exists at all, but it's shocking to me that they're like still rocking. They're doing some new things, stuff worth you talking about that's hitting your radar. And it's like some of these things just don't die. And some of like it's like the meme coins, like Shiba Inu, still not dead. Like there's 10,000 dead things out there that are just as dumb, but that one's still alive. And, you know, ICP is still actually producing things and has people working and creating applications that may end up being useful. It's crypto. This is why I just focus on Bitcoin, because this seems impossible to pick winners and losers, because I think that there's no way to know what stupid things are going to survive. And, but again, I mean, you don't know which stupid thing is going to result in something useful and a use case that really takes off. So yeah, put that one on the list of like, I can't believe it's even exists.
Well, I will say it's on one of my short list of things that I think will do very well in the future. I'm not going to try to explain it and pitch you on it, because I know it's not Bitcoin, but I'm still kind of a big believer in the research that I've done in what they're doing. And I mean, they're still early on. They have definitely dropped from when they kind of ICO'd, but I think they have some cool things that they're working on. And it's, to me, they're one of those generation 3 type blockchains, kind of similar to a Cardano, right? So we'll see what actually happens and what kind of marketing they do and partnerships that they have. But I mean, AI on blockchain is kind of cool. So I'll be intrigued to see how that progresses and if people are interested in that. The other thing that I did see, we talk about hacks all the time. There was I don't even sure what it is. Super Samurai Sushi or Super Sushi Samurai on Blast was hacked for about $4.6 million. So their token dropped like 99%. The reason I bring it up is it ended up being kind of a white hat hacker. So he's reached out and said, all right, I want to fix this, but you guys created a problem. So I took care of this so that we could go back and fix it. So he's going to help get everything back to the community that lost. And having people out there like that can find the problems and try to get something done ahead of time, or maybe before some bad actor really takes it, is kind of good to see. So, and you see a lot more of that in the crypto community, more so than anywhere else, where you don't really have the transparency anywhere else to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, Super Sushi Swap. It's shocking that they have $4.4 million worth of value to steal.
Yeah.
Well, because there's a sushi swap, and then there's a super sushi, and then there's a super sushi swap. And like, it just, this is why I don't try to keep up with this stuff.
Yeah. This is Super Sushi Samurai. So,
oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. There's no sushi samurais out there apparently until now. The other thing, I know I love to talk about NFTs, and you probably don't like to talk about NFTs nearly as much, but what's interesting is Bitcoin and the ordinals are really creating some NFT type of products out there, and just a whole nother marketplace almost because of this that is starting to grow. And it's, if you're not paying attention to the Bitcoin ordinals, it's probably something to start paying attention to, Because as successful as Ethereum is, this is pretty much Bitcoin's version of allowing things that were being built on Ethereum to be built on Bitcoin. So as an example, Node Monkeys, which is a NFT group similar to Bored Ape Yacht Club on Ethereum. Node Monkeys actually flipped the market cap of Bored Ape BAYC on Ethereum here recently. Now that's since transpired and flipped back. But for something on Bitcoin to flip one of the largest NFT projects, that's pretty interesting. And especially when the co-creators of BAYC, Yuga Labs, are coming out and saying they're really intrigued by what's happening on Bitcoin Ordinals, then maybe there is some life that's going to be coming back to NFTs. I mean, even the CryptoPunk that were one of the original NFT program platforms on Ethereum, there's one that just sold for $16 million the other day. So, man, it's crazy. There's NFTs maybe back. I mean, not that they should have gone anywhere. I think there'll be something that people use. Shoot, the real world assets are pretty much going to be NFTs, maybe a new version of it, right? But it's here to stay, and it's slowly coming back from where it was being dead with Solana not too long ago.
Yeah. I mean, I've the Bitcoin Ordinals thing has kind of popped up kind of nonstop. And back in December, it was driving up transaction costs to the point that the Bitcoin miners' stocks were going crazy. So, you know, that's kind of the indicator to me that people were really starting to put these ordinals and inscriptions into Bitcoin in a pretty big way. So it's just a matter of time before, in a bull run, those things appear to be valuable somehow. And, you know, we're just entering the bull market where crazy, stupid stuff happens and it's worth $16 million. And then 2 years from now, it'll be worth 40 grand. So it's just, I'm kind of getting used to it now.
You're probably not wrong. So I'm sure some of them will actually stay and keep some value and be worthwhile to grow the Bitcoin network. But there's also going to be a lot of going to be worth nothing here shortly too.
Yeah. I saw where Marathon mined a block and they inscribed their logo on the blockchain. So, you know, there's always kind of a neatness factor for Bitcoin. These kind of nerdy look what we can do things. I can't imagine any of them being more valuable than the monetary value of Bitcoin as a peer-to-peer exchange of value. So, but you know, these guys are computer guys. They're going to play with computer stuff. So we let them roll.
Well, I mean, I think from my perspective, most people that love Bitcoin want it all to be done on Bitcoin, which I don't think makes sense to put everything on Bitcoin. Yet there are people now trying to do everything and put it on the Bitcoin network because it is the most secure at this point, right? So whether or not it makes financial sense to do it on there or not is still to be determined, but they are definitely exploring it and we'll see what happens with this whole BRC20 token-ish concept.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. That's the beauty of crypto. It's like you think something stupid 6 years ago and then it pops back up and it's actually doing something more valuable than 10,000 other coins.
Awesome. Well, anything else on your end?
Yeah. So yesterday, Bitcoin Twitter was talking about this Nilam Resources, which is a small gold mining company. And it was like they've entered a memorandum of understanding or some written agreement in order to buy $1.7 billion in Bitcoin. And I'm like, okay, so let me see what I can figure out about this business. It's a over-the-counter pink sheet stock. Their market cap was $4.4 million yesterday. So I'm like, how are they going to come up with $1.7 billion? You know, like this is illogical. It would be great if a gold mining company did put Bitcoin on their balance sheet. I think that would be the kind of thing that the ETFs need to sell the gold 2.0 narrative for Bitcoin. And so anyway, I was like, I even put up a tweet that was like, this seems fishy, you know, like that's like me coming out and saying, yeah, I'm going to buy 10,000 Bitcoin. Like, I'd love to, but you know, I got to come up with the money. And so anyway, today, I think their stock was up 1,800%. So, you know, they may not end up being able to do what they thought they could do. But, you know, they could get some real jet fuel by kind of connecting with the Bitcoin network. And who knows, maybe they have some deep pockets and some investors behind them or something. But yeah, it was one of those things, like everybody just wanted that news of somebody, another company putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet. I looked at it, I'm like, man, these people can't afford this. Like, that's, you know, that's $1.7 billion that's not chump change.
Yeah, you could have 20x'd your money overnight.
Yeah, I mean, I actually looked at the stock, and I'm one click away from buying some of it, but I was in the mode of like trying to figure out how this was not going to work, and I didn't think, hey, dummy, people are going to pile in on this as soon as the news hits.
They welcome might as well to meme just, coins.
It's like, yeah, you know, this over the counter pink sheet stock is now a meme coin. So that was one piece, and then the other was Europe. They, you know, they've got this MiCA regulation for crypto that's in development. And so as part of their anti-money laundering, they were going to push a 1,000 euro limit for like peer-to-peer exchanges from wallet to wallet for crypto. And they backed off of that. And now it's a 3,000 euro limit, which is in line with their anonymous cash payment. So they pushed for crypto to be regulated harder than cash, and then they receded back so that it's basically, they has the same rules as a cash exchange, 3,000 euro limit for an anonymous payment and 10,000 euro limit for cash payments to businesses that aren't, that goes through more scrutiny, really. So to me, that's not an unreasonable way to handle crypto, is just kind of treat it the same as cash. That doesn't seem like a bad thing. I like it when these regulators try to push the envelope really hard and then have to bail out because the people voting for them hate it, or whoever is in control of them tells them to shut up and figure out a better way. So I'd almost rather them try to regulate hard and have to back off, because it sends me a little bit of a signal that there's elements at play that are on my team. So those were the two pieces I had on my note card that we hadn't talked about.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about the whole concept of something like a Bitcoin or crypto in general. If it takes the power away from governments, does that change the way that governments are going to have to treat their citizens or customers, whatever you want to call it, right? So I'll be intrigued to see if this push really starts to change the way that life in general kind of happens, and does the power switch to something completely different outside of a handful of governments trying to control the world?
Yeah, and it might be interesting too, because you just have so many people that just expect the government to tell them what to do, because it's been, 1971 at least, you know, that's what's kind of been the case. Government just grows and grows and grows, and it gets into every part of your life. Well, if you start to take away the government's influence on the money, it might start to change some people's minds, like, oh, there's no reason the government has control over my kids' education. There's no reason the government has control over, look at all these different things that the government shouldn't be controlling. They shouldn't be telling me to eat Lucky Charms instead of scrambled eggs for breakfast. You know, so I'm all for just a little chink in the armor of like letting people realize that the government's just run by idiots. So maybe we shouldn't listen to them when it comes to every single part of their lives.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that's a whole different conversation for another day, though.
Yeah. That's not really a doorknob conversation to have when we're kind of closing out.
Well, fantastic. Well, as always, great chatting with you, and I'm sure the next week of crypto will be as exciting as always, especially we'll get to see what SBF actually, what happens to him. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, have a good one, Hal. See you.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.